Hi, Norma.
Hi, so nice to see you.
Yeah.
I'm so thrilled. I have been thinking about this podcast more than any of the others. I'm so impressed with little I know about you. What I'd like to do in this introduction is tell everyone that I met you through a very extraordinary doctor, researcher, who you know really well, Dr. David Dodik. And he is very well respected, and he shared a lecture and presentation that you did for a company that he's affiliated with. And he said, "This woman is going to blow your mind." And I listened to it three times and I was so excited. I've asked him so many times about stem cell, and he said, "Wait till you hear Donna." So, Donna, if you wouldn't mind introducing yourself, giving everybody some background on your experience, and then we can talk about that lecture.
Sure. Well, I'm Donna Chang, and it's a pleasure to be here. Honored to be on your podcast. And I also have been thinking about what to share. And I know that your listeners are very much interested in health and wellness. And I think stem cells and the excitement behind them. I've been excited about stem cells as for as long as I can remember. I did my graduate work at Johns Hopkins University in biotechnology. I had some idea of what regenerative medicine or what that meant, but in terms of like actual application, no clue, right? No clue how it was going to pan out in the
Right.
future. I found myself working in economic development. And economic development is one of those strange fields that no one really knows about, but every state and county and jurisdiction has these people called economic developers that essentially work on recruiting companies into their state or into their territory so that they can spur economic growth, more jobs and things. And so my specialty was in life sciences. And I remember the first time I was introduced to a stem cell-based technology where, and to give you a little bit of context, in 2005, we heard that stem cells were readily found in our tissues, including our fat. That was in 2005. In 2006, is when I saw that not only had a group, and this was actually a South Korean group, had found and isolated those cells, but they actually grew them outside the body. And that for me was the, like, that's where the emoticon with the lid
2006.
exploding kind of happened,
Wow.
because
Wow.
that's been the major challenge. The challenge has always been, how do we get cells in large enough quantities and do this outside of the body? Because our bodies are limited, right? Our bodies are limited in terms of the number of cells that we can produce. So how can we do this outside of it and get treatments out of this one day in the future? And so the ability to grow cells or the ability to replicate cells is like point number one. You have to be able to do it. So anyway, after seeing that, I realized that this was my life's work. No matter what, I just wanted to be involved in it. And I wanted to know, there are clearly mechanisms within our own bodies that take place all the time without us even thinking about it. We're healing constantly. If you don't believe me, you get a cut, you bleed, and you fix it, fixes itself.
Yeah.
The older we get, this process takes a little longer, right? So it means that disease and injury are always there. That risk never changes. So the good news is the offense never changes. It's not like they get any stronger or they get weaker. That always stays the same. Our defense changes, right? Our defense for disease and injury changes. And so as we age, we get weaker. And so by definition, our cells, our cell potency within our own body changes. So yeah, the idea of getting that back really excited me. And I went full on into industry. I joined an international stem cell research company. And from there, I witnessed a lot of applications. And so I wish I could say I'm totally brave in this area to embark on all these sort of clinical trials and invest in all this. But I saw with my own two eyes a lot of different applications when it came to stem cells. And I really started to understand that stem cell therapy will never be a one-off. You know, it's not something you get once and you're suddenly dramatically better. This, in some conditions, it might be very much that case, but we've sort of been misinformed about generally the idea of regeneration. We're constantly degenerating, and so we need to constantly regenerate. And so, yeah, at Hope Biosciences, we started six, actually 7 years ago now, really with the mission to make this available to everybody. It's not technology that is just for, you hear about athletes and, you know, the superstars getting access to cells, but it's getting the best cells in the most consistent way and getting access for everybody. So affordability, making sure that we create a great product at a low cost is sort of the whole crux behind what we're doing.
I mean, that really is the dream, that there really can be healthcare on a high level for everyone. And I mean, I think everybody wants that to happen. It shouldn't be an elitist opportunity. I just it's so exciting. And I think you said, well, you just said that you saw with your own two eyes things happening with stem cell. What are some of the real standouts that you remember as you saw this progressing?
So I'll tell you from personal experience, one my case being one of them. I remember when the technology was first being developed, and this was in Korea. We had set up a lab. We had, you know, figured out how to process these cells and actually culture them. At that point, the idea of intravenous application, so giving cells through the bloodstream, was a totally new concept. It was new only because we never really, as an industry, never had enough cells, accessible cells, to really make sense to put intravenously. But suddenly, now that we have all these cells, well, why not? Why not give it into this in circulation and see what happens? Now, why did us employees consent on receiving this unknown product?
I would have done
All, you know, we're I'm you know we're biologists, and so we know what we're looking at and feel comfortable with what the cells were. And so getting my own cells didn't seem like such a scary thought. And I received them, and you know, I think the company just wanted to see what would happen to us. Like, are we gonna grow a third head, or you know, what's gonna happen? But none of that happened. Nothing happened, actually. It was very uneventful, much like most cell therapy is pretty uneventful. And then over time, I had psoriasis ever since I can remember. It started when I was really in middle school, but it got really bad when I was in college, and plaques pretty much on my torso area. And I was still on steroids. And I remember a couple of weeks had gone by after receiving cells, and I just wasn't really itching. And then a couple more months went by. I weaned off of my medication. Anyway, a year goes by and I'm plaque free and I'm just living this normal life. And how quickly we forget, right? We just forget we were like before, and think that's what healing does to you. You just forget.
That is great.
And so if I had explained it back then, if I said, you know what, I'm not itchy, they would have looked at me like I'm crazy. Even though we're all researchers, there was no evidence for this. I mean, there was some idea that perhaps these stem cells can regulate our immune systems, perhaps, but without real evidence, it was hard to know for sure. But now we know. You know, fast forward all these years, mesenchymal stem cells, or the particular stem cells that we deal with that are found in your body, everywhere in your body, are very much responsible for regulating your immune system, which is one of the most important characteristics that they possess.
So I have a ton of questions. Okay. So you said that the stem cells, instead of targeting your psoriasis, they were targeting your immune system.
Well, that's what we know now. That's the mechanism of action. How do the cells actually alleviate all of these autoimmune conditions?
So it automatically is focused on the immune system, which sort of protects us from getting things that we don't want to have. And then I think that to just go back a little bit about the reproduction of stem cells. So to kind of have a little clarity from, I understand a little bit that the stem cells, like you said, live in our fat cells and that they can be harvested there. Is that it? If you want to explain that a little bit, sounds a little
Sure.
gross, but good gross.
Those stem cells, these particular stem cells, mesenchymal stem cells, again, are adult stem cells. They come from not embryos, they come from adults. And in our bodies, we have mesenchymal stem cells running around everywhere. So if I took some bone marrow, or I took some blood, or if I took a wad of your hair, we can find mesenchymal stem cells. But the way we look at it, quite simply, is what would you like to give us for that source? And fat tissue in America, we have an abundance
Like
of,
a
and
giveaway.
everyone is so
It's
happy to give it to us. So that's why we selected fat. And another, all joking aside, fat tissue is, by definition, always going to have mesenchymal stem cells because the fact that the fat is there means that those stem cells exist to keep your fat there. Okay. All tissues need a healthy source of stem cells too, to keep it in place and keep it healthy. So that's what those stem cells do. So I equate it like gold. You know, people say, well, you can go mine gold, or you can go, you know, dig and get gold. There are multiple ways to find gold. And so once you find it, though, no one's asking you, oh, well, how was this, you know, how was this actually found? You know, no one's asking you that. I know that, you know, in the stem cell world, many scientists will argue, okay, well, these are all technically different cells. Different sources and different cells are all different. Quite simply, we want a cell that has the capability of differentiating, which basically means a stem cell, a healthy stem cell, has no identity. Okay. It should be in an undifferentiated state. There's no identity. It can become anything. So something in the body says, you need to become skin. You need to become bone. You need to become brain. That's what that cell should be able to do. So it functionally has to be able to do that. And on top of that, has to be able to regulate your immune system and do all those things that they're supposed to do. So that's what we're looking for. I don't really care where it comes from. Again, I like fat because everyone has it and it's such an easy thing to get. And unfortunately, we only need a tablespoon of fat.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, I was thinking, okay, get it. I'm like, take it away. And I know I'm not sure I can remember the exact number, but you talked about the number of cells that we can harvest, or that we can, is harvest the right word? I feel like
Correct.
it
It harvest is a great word. Yep.
So what, how, like, how many cells should you have, or should we store, or should be like, what per person, how would that work?
Great question. The The fact is that we all have different amounts of cells in circulation. Okay, so if you are a patient who is older, who has been sick for many years, you probably have no stem cells in your circulation, which makes it very challenging because if we took bone marrow, where all of your circulating stem cells start from, if we took bone marrow, yeah, you would have a problem. There's very few in there if you're sick and older. If we want to make sure that what you get back, so patient to patient, person to person, is always consistent, you have to somehow come up with, well, what is the efficacious dose? Like, how many cells does one need to fix X problem? This is the reason why these treatments are regulated by FDA, because there's too much uncertainty. How many cells do we really need to fix a problem? And until those are proven out with clinical trials, it's very hard to predict. But going back to how we produce these cells, if we're all inconsistent, then the first thing that we have to do is make everyone consistent. So, like for instance, you go and to get a drug, buy Tylenol. You know that all the pills are the same. You trust that all the pills are the same. We also need to do the same. When you receive cells, every dose of cells has to be relatively the same. Now, how do we say that when everybody has different cells? So your cells normally are different than my cells. But remember their function. Their function should be the same. So whether it's yours or mine, they should go into our bodies and have the same function. So it's very important. And when you talk about how many cells you give somebody back, you are thinking about how many live, so they've got to be viable, and functional cells we're giving back at a time. And so that magic number is through many trials and through going through production process, we have established at 200 million cells. So we have a
That's what I thought I heard you say,
yes,
200 million.
200 million cells. But going back to, well, like an example of a disease, we don't just wake up one day and have Alzheimer's disease. It's a very slow degenerative disease. So if you picture a hill and there's a boulder and you are moving this boulder, okay, and the boulder is the disease, you're trying to move this boulder up the hill. It's going to keep moving down no matter what you do, right? Now, if you add stem cells to that, you probably get a boost of energy and you can move that back further, but eventually it'll keep coming back down. So this idea of regeneration, you have to repeat. And so now, 200 million cells, how many times could that be repeated? Fascinating, search. If you go on to clinicaltrials.gov, we have a government website that tracks all the clinical trials pretty much globally. And you can look that mesenchymal stem cells have thousands of trials globally. That's how much is being invested in these cells because everybody knows they can do all these things. But if you look at how many administrations of cells they're giving, and their doses are much less, you're looking at like 60 to maybe 120 million cells given at a time. If you look at the repeatability, very few, I would say less than 3% of trials are giving repeated treatments. That means that they're giving one, crossing their fingers and hoping it will work. And for some people, it will. It's not just a imagination. It really is working. But again, if you want to make it work in everyone, you have to be able to repeat it. And so that repeatability from that one tablespoon of fat, we have engineered a method to be able to repeat for the rest of your life. Now, there is a finite number still. It's 1,037 treatments on average we can make with one tablespoon of fat. That's 200 million cells,
Oh my God.
1,037 times, so 414 billion cells.
Wow. I think going back to the quality of the cell. So I would assume if I were 21 or even younger, maybe I would say maybe I should have myself, harvested now, and put them in a refrigerator in my little freezer in my apartment or somewhere, and have them as a sampling of my best cell quality. Does that make any sense?
So it's a question we get a lot. You know, I'm older. My cells have been exposed to every kind of contaminant out there. They're probably no good. They're poison. They're all these things.
Yeah.
Okay. So that is entirely possible. I mean, there are many papers that look at, you know, cell senescence and the aging of cells and what happens over time. And there's no doubt that there is some detrimental effects. However, your body is constantly making new cells.
Right?
And if you think going back to fat as a source, you notice that as we get older, fat is hard to get rid of, right? So your fat is actually very resilient. And that means that the cells that are in your fat are largely unaffected. So if we were to pull cells, and we do it all the time because we have donors that are across all age groups, right? From babies to 95-year-olds. And if you look at those cells and the health of those cells, in a lot of cases, you can't tell the difference. So that means that there is such thing as a healthy cell. And remember, you have to go back to function. Is it a viable and functional cell? If you have a viable and functional cell, even if you're 100 years old, that by virtue probably means the fact that you're 100 means you have a lot of these good cells.
Yeah.
Now
yeah.
we're going to take those and we're going to even the playing field so that now everyone's getting the same amount of cells. So everyone's getting 200 million cells of the same viability and the same potency. Yeah.
So just to be clear, if do the cells need to come from your body to be used in your body only, or can other people's cells be used?
So the short answer is, we have shown that, and so it's also been validated by the scientific community, that mesenchymal stem cells are immunoprivileged cells, which is just a fancy word to say that they're not going to create any immune system issues. So if you get my cells, your body is going to integrate them, no problem, and it's just going to be peace. Nothing's going to happen. You're not going to reject MSCs. It's not going to happen.
Really?
Another example is animal trials. Typically, in animal trials, you can't just give animals cells from a human and expect them to just integrate. But MSCs, no problem. You can give them to an animal, they're fine. They integrate, no problem. And there's just no safety issues there, right? So MSCs have shown consistently that across species and even across people, there are no issues. I have been a fervent believer, however, that though we haven't had any issues or seen any issues of patients receiving other people's MSCs, what has not been done is looking at cell administration over time. So today in clinical trials, in some protocols, we give people 8 infusions, for example. Some people are getting 45 infusions, like in Parkinson's disease. We have a patient who's getting 45 infusions. And you look at this, you would say, well, what if they receive someone else's cells 45 times? And that's where we don't know.
Yeah,
if you
yeah.
keep introducing
yeah, that's,
foreign
that's
genetic perfect. Material.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I would say, if your plan is long-term, and we're not there right now, eventually we're going to get to a point where stem cells are not used to treat disease, but used to prevent it. And we get cells proactively.
Yeah.
That means that it's better to use your own, because then you will never have issues with rejection.
Yeah. It's what a dream. What
a dream. Yeah.
I mean, it's just so extraordinary. So I would still think that if I were 20 or 21, that I would think about harvesting my cells and storing them to have just as the best quality cell probably that I'll produce in my lifetime to have that. Do you think that will happen?
I do. And I think that right now, like for example, we are a commercial bank. People can bank their cells if they wish. And so we see younger and younger and younger people coming in to bank. And so that proactive banking is not only is there, we don't know what will happen in the next few years, anything can happen. Injury is also as risky as disease. And so when you're thinking that way, yeah, it makes a lot of sense to bank in advance. The best time to bank, I always say, is today. You're better off banking today.
At birth,
Well,
whatever.
at birth. And yeah, the exciting part for babies is you hear about women banking cord blood. Cord blood has for a long time been associated with stem cells. Now, it's true that cord blood does contain stem cells, but it contains something called hematopoietic stem cells. Hematopoietic stem cells make only blood. So if the idea has been, let's bank cord blood so that one day we can use it for all these other diseases, that's not going to happen. That is an application flaw because of the type of cell it is. You need the right type of cell. And that's why tissues are being stored in lieu of blood, because in the tissues, you can find these mesenchymal stem cells. Well,
Interesting.
in the placenta, we can actually find the MSCs. And so, yes, we do for newborns. And those kids will be, when they're 80, they'll be getting cells from when they were born.
So selfishly, I'm going to ask you. So I'm 78. I'm fairly healthy. Would you recommend that I start harvesting whatever critter I have in my body? That's a cell with hopes for protecting me. Do you think I should just do it?
Absolutely, you should bank right away. Everyone should bank, and one day everyone will be banked. It's hard to imagine how all of this will happen, but much like these have become like cell phones have become a staple in our lives. Yeah, everyone will one day have cells banked. It's just the way it'll go. And then if something happens, you need access to your cells. A bank will release them and get you your cells. That's what will happen.
So this sounds like a very simplistic question, but I'm sure other people listening are saying, well, what doctor does harvesting fat from my tummy for stem cells? Like, where would you go?
So any plastic surgeon has the tools to be able to do it. Any of them. So you need to work with one around you, where you live, and FedEx. We get fat FedEx from everywhere. That's taken small amounts of fat from all over the place, and that fat is again brought here, and we produce and we go through the production all here, right in Texas.
Oh my God, that is fascinating. I guess it's obvious, but I never would have thought that that's where the doctor I would be going to for this. All right, well, I'm gonna have to do a little research. That sounds exciting. I feel like there are some sort of questions that people might have about, they might have had an injury, or their knee hurts, or their hip, or their arm, or their rotator cuff. When something like that is happening and they've tried lots of different things, what should they do if they're now thinking, maybe I should find out how I can, look at stem cells as maybe a solution?
Yeah, it's So this is where we get into the topic of access. How does one access stem cells? Okay, so you hear a lot about people going overseas for stem cell stuff. And one of the reasons why it's overseas is because the limitation that we have here in the United States is processed cells. So cells that come to a lab like ours and are processed for any extent of time is considered drug manufacturing. So suddenly your cells become drugs and hence are regulated as drug products. So regulated drug products can only be received in a few ways. One, a clinical trial or expanded access. Expanded access is sort of an expanded use to a trial in the event a patient is too sick to participate in a trial or something. There's also the Right to Try program, which is a another program that allows patients with terminal conditions or life-threatening conditions to have access to the drug. Now, it can only go through a physician, has to certify that you're qualified for that. And then, so those are the ways that one can access drug products here. So you can see the limitation. If I have a bad knee, I mean, logically, it seems so simple. You can just inject some cells. Why wouldn't this help? Until it goes through clinical trials and gets approved by FDA, it cannot be sold as that. So, right now, we have Hope BioServices a lot of trials. We have over 35 protocols right now in progress. Orthopedic conditions is sort of on the list of things to do. We have focused primarily on the brain for most of our existence. We are looking at sort of unmet needs as a primary focus. But yeah, eventually orthopedics makes a lot of sense. I mean, it is relatively easy to do, to treat orthopedic conditions.
And I mean, Donna, the miracle of relieving pain and discomfort. And so you're looking at 35 points of pain that are needing to be addressed, is that right? I whatever it takes, I think that this is an area that really needs help, because only people who have the means to travel and to have this type of thing done in another country that views this opportunity in a different way. And so it really, from an ethical point of view, it seems uneven. And once again, if you're not financially able to take advantage of that incredible opportunity, you have to deal with the pain in other ways, which we certainly are not wanting people to have to go through. So now we're going to go to your brain conversation, which is what that presentation was that you did. And like I said, I listened to it three times because I just couldn't believe it. I was just so blown away. So if you could take us through sort of a little overview of what that incredible lecture was about, it would be amazing to share some of that, the essence of it at least.
Sure. Yeah, it was a long lecture, so I'll save you from most of it.
Great. It was great. No, I could hear it again.
when you talked about joints, joint health, so our sort of the lifespan of our current joints is defined as what we know today, but it's going to change. When stem cells are administered before your joints start falling apart, then it becomes a question, how long can we get joints to last? Because that is actually much easier than treating
Fixing.
completely fallen apart joints. Brain is exactly the same way. The brain, by the time we have our first symptom of Alzheimer's, it's already taken 20 to 30 years of falling apart to get there.
Really?
Yes. And so
Really?
that means that slow degeneration over time, we're
Yeah.
really not doing anything about. I mean, we can do all the things that they tell us to, right? Eat lots of blueberries and do crossword puzzles. And there's so many things that we can do to keep ourselves active. And it's so
Right.
important. I don't want to undermine that in any way. It's so important to have a purpose, to have a community, and do all those things that we do to have a good to have good base health. But stem cells are going to change that degeneration process. We may never get rid of Alzheimer's, and the goal may not be to cure Alzheimer's. What if the goal is to just extend your brain health long enough so you never see a symptom of Alzheimer's?
Which is amazing. It's amazing.
And that's the way we have to think about it.
Yeah.
Disease against, again, your offense is never going to change. So it's good. We just have to change our defense mechanism so that we can face disease after the grave, right? So
Yeah.
that's the idea.
Yeah.
How do we live as healthy as possible the time we're here? So brain, in order to have a very good functioning brain, you have to have great brain health. And starting with inflammation, we think is a big key sort of common denominator across a
Yeah.
lot of the diseases that we've studied, from our early days when we looked at cerebral palsy to ALS to Alzheimer's disease and Parkinson's. We do lots in Parkinson's disease. Inflammation is a key contributor to our cells not being able to multiply and
Yeah.
fix the problem.
Yeah.
Our bodies are actually capable of fixing big problems. I mean, take smoking, for instance. You can be a smoker for 20 years, essentially make your lungs completely black, and somehow your body has the ability to regenerate them almost as good as you,
Incredible. It's
right?
incredible. It's
Yeah.
incredible.
And thankfully, most of us quit smoking when we're young, right? That's why that's possible when we're younger. The older we get, this gets more and more difficult. So you need more help, more assistance. Yeah, so the brain is the same way. We need to, in all of the diseases we've studied, we have been looking at neuroinflammation. Do stem cells decrease neuroinflammation? Now, before, the goal used to be, do stem cells travel up to the brain? Okay, because if you give them, if you don't inject them directly into your head, how are they going to get there? Okay, so back in the day,
Even with the transfusion or an
well, so
infusion.
now, yes, with transfusion, we know that the cells make it to the brain. But back then, we didn't,
Oh,
without
okay.
knowing that, local
Yeah.
delivery, which a lot of places still do, by the way, if you go overseas, there are places that will inject cells directly into your head, is sort of the approach that, with a limited amount of cells, the idea of getting cells directly to the pain point is sort of the logic by which people are administering
Yeah,
cells.
yeah.
Or into the cerebral spinal fluid directly in there. Now, that's all possible and for the most part pretty safe, but from an application standpoint, again, when you're dealing with an aggressively degenerative disease, it's not an easy thing to get poked in the head all the time, right? So we
Yeah.
have to make it a treatment that's easy to receive and easy to administer. That's why IV infusion, if we know that a certain percentage of cells are going to home to that brain, if we know that that's possible, then that's the best way to do it, non-invasive. Yeah.
So, again, if you're younger and you are able to access whatever updated data there is about doing proactive, acting proactively for your brain health and your obviously body, I would think that there would be a lot of very interested people. At what age should you start thinking about that?
Yeah, well, I think the younger you are, obviously getting banked is great. When in terms of application, I have selfishly, of course, I want these cells. I want to be
Yeah.
able to access my own cells
Right.
far before I'm 80. I have 5-year-old twins right now, so I've always said, by the time they're 30, we're going to make sure they can get cells once a
Yeah.
year at
Yeah.
least.
Oh
And
my
if they get
God.
cells once a year, imagine what we can prevent. Now, all of this is going to be proven over time, but we're sort of at this beginning where there's a lot of data and the momentum towards fixing disease. I mean, one after another, there's all kinds of applications being used right now that we see the evidence of cells working in those areas. And now we're just going to move that needle a little bit back.
Yeah.
When does disease start? And try and attack it as close to when it starts. So better diagnostics.
Yeah. That's really the key. However, I would like to propose that if you, for any reason, are wanting to experiment on a 78-year-old, I will do any stem cell experiment. I would love to be part of a study. I agree with you that there comes a point where you can just have so many expectations because age just starts diminishing the quality of the cells. And but I'm very active and my mind is busy, and I feel, and I'm sure there are other people who are in my age group who would say, if there is anything, to just sort of keep it, keep it in tune, tune ups or whatever.
Yeah.
We would really want it because we're really functioning, at a high level. And there's still, I think, besides eating blueberries and doing, I play Scrabble and doing all of those things and exercising every day, I think there could be more experimentation. I would like to propose on 78-year-olds who are functioning pretty well and are interested in seeing any trials that can happen when people reach a certain age. So I'm just making a proposal. I'm sure it's not on the top of the list, but I do think the ultimate is, like you said, for your twins to have once a year this proactive opportunity. Can you imagine? Can you imagine? It takes a look at our healthcare system and everything we're doing now. Almost, it feels like the Middle Ages. Like, what are we doing? What just these surgeries and these things that we're subjecting human beings to that would really no longer be an issue. I have a question about, and it's a random question, and I don't know if it even makes sense, but I'm becoming more and more aware of mental illness, and more so after COVID. I think it's very hard to really have a sense of what each of us are capable of dealing with when it comes to stress or when it comes to some family genetic disposition. But I do see more and more, especially in the younger demographic, whether it's Gen Z or millennials, these critical points of distress that I have not really seen in this way in previous generations. And I've been doing this for 56 years and hiring many, many people through the years and also different generations. Is there anything that stem cell can do when it comes to mental illness?
So it's a very we see the effects of mental illness, particularly in some of the long COVID studies that we've been doing. And in traumatic brain injury, we also have measured depression and anxiety in those patients and have seen that after cells, it really does help for that. And, you know, when we think about the brain, there's only so much that can be done to create that equilibrium in the brain. And all of when they say your chemicals have to be balanced, you know, your brain has to be balanced, we can do all of that. But, you know, Nora, when it comes to society today, like I remember when I first saw the term geriatric millennial, I was like, oh my gosh, that's me. I finally have like a group that I can relate to because I still have to write everything down and you know I'm one of those. It really is so hard to relate to the people that we're even hiring. You know, they're young, out of school, and they come in here and it's like I am maybe closer in age to them than the generation above me, but still that relation is they go through, I think the day and age that we live in is something else. I mean, it is, unless you consciously make an effort to zone out of it and be present, it's so hard. It's hard for me, you know, so I can't imagine what it's like that.
It's toxic and it's almost and it's addictive and it's very hard to disconnect because especially when you're in your 20s, you want to relate to your peers and you want to be a part of it, but being a part of it has a lot of demands and expectations that are just not humanly possible anymore. Anyway, I'm sure there'll be developments in this area because just alone the speed and the success of stem cell relieving the medical industry, the healthcare industry of procedures that are no longer going to be needed and medications that'll no longer be needed. There'll be time, hopefully, to spend on whether it's chemicals or whatever is happening in the brain, and the stress factor, I'm sure, is a big part of it. So I just love the time you're giving me here, and all of this information is just so extraordinary and hopeful and inspirational. I was talking about not too long ago when I grew up on the news, there was John F. Kennedy, Martin Luther King, and Gandhi, and then oh, we landed on the moon. And so, as a baby boomer, that was the news, and that was inspiration every day. People saying things that were so enlightened and so positive and so hopeful. And today we are feeling desperate for that. But this conversation with you surpasses the experience I had watching John F. Kennedy, Martin Luther King, and Gandhi. And as spiritually exciting their words were, the fact that you are working in a field that will change healthcare so dramatically is so extraordinary, Donna. And I just think, first of all, everybody who works in this field, we are so grateful for. And you look like you're 12. I just want to say that it doesn't seem possible that somebody as young as you are achieving these extraordinary strides in healthcare. And if you could just give us sort of a final look at tomorrow and what you're working on, it would be extraordinary to hear your words.
Well, Norma, first of all, you are way too kind. You know, I am humbled to be here to be able to do this. And again, it comes from a selfish place. I want cells for my family as much as everyone else deserves it. too. You know, we all need access to this. And the inventor of this technology, you know, he and I have been, we're just attached at the hip when it comes to the mission and the purpose of this. It's still in trial stages, and though it hasn't, you know, reached its final approval, the hope that you feel is real. It's tangible because it makes sense. It's scientifically sound, and the data is going to stand for itself. And so it is our job to make sure that we continue that effort so that, again, we can all have access at the end. And I know that right now, all the work we are doing is focused in disease, but we will get to a point where we prove out that this same treatment will help prevent disease. And that's the exciting, that's the truly exciting part to all of this. You know, we're watching, just as you're watching on the sidelines, we're also watching every day to see how all of this will play out. But spreading the word about what we do, I think it's important to gain public interest so that people are invested. We have to get more invested in our health. That's why I love your message, Norma. I think we all want to grow up to be you. I mean, that's what we want. Even without cells, you are the epitome of what I would like to be one day. And it is, you know, where technology is going to help. We're going to help get us there. But I think we have a bright future ahead.
Yeah. And your twins are so lucky that they have this extraordinary mother who's doing extraordinary things. And I hope we can connect again and see what progress is happening, and we'll stay in tune with each other, because I am in such awe of you and the work you do. And it is so extraordinarily special, and I'm thrilled to share this time with people who follow me. And I have a broad age range, and so I'm curious to see the feedback from different age groups. And I'm sure you'll have a lot of questions that we will pass on to you, and keep everybody engaged in your progress. So, Donna, you are just unbelievable, and I'm so thrilled to know you. And I thank you so much for this time.
Oh, thank you, Norma.
Continued success.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye.